Hey, fellow romance readers, I'm Amy.
And I'm Sarah, and this is Post-Book Depression. You know that feeling you get when you finish a good book that you didn't want to end?
Have you finished a book and just weren't ready to move on from the story and its beloved characters? You find yourself needing just a little more? Well, this multi-trope romance podcast gives you the opportunity to dig deeper with us into books we love as we discuss all the reasons we can't move on.
Feeling chatty? You can continue the conversation with us on Instagram at Post Book Depression Podcast or on Facebook in our Post Book Depression discussion group.
We would love for you to subscribe to our podcast and take a brief moment to leave a review.
Are you ready? Let's discuss.
Welcome to the show, everyone. So today we're going to discuss The Inmate by Freida McFadden. The first few minutes, we're going to do a brief review of the story without any spoilers, and then we are going to shift into a deeper book discussion. That's going to include lots of spoilers. We are, of course, going to let you know before we start the discussion portion. All right, let's dig in. The Inmate is a psychological romance thriller about Shane Nelson, one of the most notorious and dangerous inmates in a maximum security prison, and Brooke Sullivan, a new nurse practitioner at the prison, whose testimony put Shane into prison for the rest of his life for a series of grisly murders. None of the staff know Shane was Brooke's high school sweetheart or about her intimate connection to him, and this is the fast-paced story of what happens as a result. Sarah, what did you think of The Inmate?
Amy, this book blew my mind.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I cannot wait to dig in and discuss this book. It did not turn out how I thought it was going to at all. So that's all I'm going to say right now.
My two favorite genres are romance and suspense thriller. So I love it when I get a combination of the two. And this story was a roller coaster of ups and downs. I felt like some of the story was a bit predictable, but there are some surprises and unexpected turns that I didn't see coming, and those made the story so rewarding. All right, let's get into some of our ratings. Angst, gritting teeth emojis. How did you rate it?
I rated a 4.
Okay, tell me more.
This story, as I was reading it, I thought it was super predictable. I thought I had this whole thing figured out, and there was so many things. It goes back and forth between the present and the past, and you just don't know. You think you know, but you don't know how it's going to end up. There was a lot happening, and I mean, it's about murders. You know, it's about multiple murders. There was a lot of angst for me. What did you rate it?
I gave it 4.25, so I was very close to you. I felt like this was predominantly a story filled with angst. Mm-hmm. Out of everything else, that definitely took the cake, and the story had me going back and forth throughout, and so that's why I gave it what I did. All right, humor, laughing emojis.
I gave it a 0.
Okay. I gave it 0.5, and I felt like that was generous because there's not any humor in it at all, really. Okay, so it's a 0 is a fair rating.
It was a 0. Yeah, and I kind of wondered, can I do that? Because we haven't ever had a story where there was just...
I did have a couple of moments of chuckling, so that was kind of what pushed me to 0.5, but not much.
I'm trying to think if I had any of chuckling.
It was an internal chuckle, too.
Okay. Yeah, there wasn't. It was... Yeah, I was shocked when I went to do this, so.
Okay. Spiciness. Fire emojis. How many did you give it?
I put 0.
I did 2. Okay, act to be fair, I gave it 0.5. But other than some kissing scenes, the spice was very G-rated. Though the thrill...
Could you even give it a 0.5?
No.
Maybe
I can't. I feel like
0.25? Because it says...
It does.
Things happen, but you don't get any description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I gave it a 0.
The thriller aspects of the story were definitely the main focus.
100%.
So the spice in this one, you say 0, I'll say 0.25.
There. Yeah, you know what? I'll bump it to 0.25 because they do address, but there's no description.
Correct. Okay. Tears, crying emojis.
Okay, I feel like this is generous. I gave it a 1.
Explain.
Your face right now. You look so confused. I gave it a 1 because it was sad, the things that happened. I feel like maybe I should have given it higher.
No, I mean, you're free to give it higher. I did 0.5.
Okay. I thought you were thinking like, this is very sad, Sarah. People die.
Well, that's true. But I have a heart of stone. Murder stories are my jam, man. And I don't get sad about people dying, only animals. Isn't that terrible?
We should talk later.
I know.
No, I gave it a 1 because it was emotional. Certain aspects of the story were emotional, but I did not cry and I did not feel the urge to cry. Mm-hmm. But thinking of if this was real life, actually, if I was thinking this was real life, I probably should have upped that. No, I'm going to stay. We're heartless. Let's move on.
Other than some like sad that these things happened moments.
It wasn't sad.
It wasn't sad. Mm-mm.
No, it wasn't a sad. It was a sad story, but it wasn't sad.
Didn't bring. There wasn't a lot of tears.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, overall, how many stars?
Okay, I gave it a 4.25.
Me too.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So I fully expected this story to be predictable. Mm-hmm. Seriously predictable. And I feel like when a story takes you on a roller coaster, and even up until the last paragraph of the epilogue waits to blow your mind one final time, that was enough to bump it up a little bit higher for me.
Exactly. I feel the exact same way, because the entire time I was reading this, I was annoyed with how predictable it felt. So listen, listeners, if you have not read this book, you need to just go read it. Just trust us. And when you're reading it, if you feel annoyed because this is so predictable.
It's not.
Keep reading.
Hang in. Hang keep in reading. There.
I was blown away. I don't think I have ever read maybe one, you know, Perfect Strangers, I think, blew my mind in this way. I don't think I've ever read another book that literally the last two chapters is where everything turns a completely different corner that you did not see coming. Mm-hmm. I'm racking my brain trying to think of something that blew my mind the way this story did, and I can't think of one. So it was
intense.
It was intriguing. It was an intriguing story.
All right, everyone, that concludes the spoiler-free quick review of this story. So now we're going to shift into the deeper discussion portion, and as I mentioned, lots of spoilery discussion is ahead. If you haven't read this story, go check it out. Come back and listen to our discussion, and then let us know all your thoughts on the story. You can find us on Instagram, Post Book Depression Podcast, or in Facebook, in our Post Book Depression discussion group. You can also email us at postbookdepressionpodcast@gmail.com. Let's dig into the inmate, Sarah. So this story has two timelines in it. We have the present and we have the past, and it goes back and forth between two different timelines through the entire story. All right, let's start with Brooke's job at the prison and how nobody knows her connection to Shane.
Yes, okay, so I was surprised by the fact that she did not necessarily choose to work there. We find out later throughout the story that she couldn't get a job being a nurse practitioner anywhere because supposedly a disgruntled patient had kind of given a bad review or something. So when she goes in, I kind of thought that she chose it on purpose.
I did too.
And I thought that she was wanting to see Shane. Mm-hmm. Did you think that?
Yes, I did think that. I also found it a little strange that nobody caught the connection of the two of them. For it to be such grisly murders and to be in the news, one, I would think they would recognize her name.
Yes.
But two, that they didn't do their due diligence to make sure there wasn't a connection. And she didn't disclose that. I feel like she had an obligation to disclose that. But I guess she needed the job.
I was very surprised by that too. And it had me questioning, in reality, if this was really happening. I don't care how backed up, shorthanded, whatever is taking place. If it's a maximum security prison, why are we not making sure that the people we are hiring have a very extensive background check? That was very bizarre to me, and I found it very unrealistic. And if it's not unrealistic, that's concerning to me because, you know, for me, that kind of is like a slippery slope, isn't it? Because she could be going in there unaware that he is still in that prison. I mean, probably. I don't think I would be unaware if a person tried to strangle me and kill me. I'd probably be keeping tabs on where they're moving to. But the fact that she could have contact with him in there, have a history with him having tried to kill her. I mean, who's to say that she wouldn't try to, like, kill him?
And
she's a nurse.
And if she didn't feel safe being around him, I would think that she would want to disclose the fact that I have an intimate connection to mm-hmm. a prisoner here. If at any point he needs any kind of services, there needs to be another nurse or another doctor. The doctor that she never sees needs to be the one that comes in and treats him.
I agree with that. It was very... I didn't know how believable when I was reading it. I kind of questioned, is that really how that would play out in real life? But like you said, I mean, she probably just really needed the job. But again, I say even 10 years later, I don't think that you would forget her name, her face,
absolutely anything. Not.
I mean, she was 45 minutes from the town that it occurred in. Mm-hmm. So it was very strange to me.
Yeah, I agree. That transitions us to Shane's first injuries and him coming to have his first interaction with her in the prison, essentially. And they're both, I mean, she knows he's there, but they're a little bit surprised at the interaction. She wasn't expecting to see him so quickly, if at all. And of course, he doesn't know she works there at all. So let's talk briefly about this interaction.
Okay, so what were your thoughts when he comes down that hall and looks up and sees her?
At this point in the story, in my mind, he's innocent. So when he sees her and he's trying to figure out what is happening, I really want to be on Shane's side. I'm feeling the attractiveness that she's feeling as she's thinking about, oh my gosh, he still looks handsome, even more handsome than he was all those years ago. And I'm feeling a little bit of her nerves at seeing him for the first time in so many years.
So when she sees him for the very first time coming down the hallway, I kind of felt, again, is that really how you would react to seeing somebody who you are 100% in your mind, without a shadow of a doubt, this man tried to kill you? And regardless of the fact that, so in the story, Brooke has a son that's 10 years old. So she slept with Shane the night that all these murders took place and she got pregnant. Mm-hmm. So she has a 10-year-old son with him. I don't care if that is the father of your child. If somebody tried to kill you, I think it warrants a little bit stronger of a reaction mm-hmm. than just, and I guess maybe she had mentally prepared herself for if she ever did. I just don't know how you could prepare yourself for something like that. Shane's reaction I found to be more kind of like how it probably would take mm-hmm. the shock that you're seeing somebody that testified against you. He doesn't know he has a son.
Maybe some anger on his part?
A lot more anger. Mm-hmm. He kind of had daggers in his eyes for a few seconds and then it subsides. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that was one of the brilliant ways that Frieda had, with the way she had written this story, to make us believe Shane's really innocent. Mm-hmm. He's innocent, and you get on his side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very quickly, because you see this man just, he's been in prison for a decade. He's not even angry anymore. At this point, this is his life.
And it really humanizes him.
It did.
For the reader, for sure.
Yes. Well, and then when he comes in there and he's needing stitches, it was, right? That was the mm-hmm. first time. Yeah, the first time he comes, he needs stitches. And they have nothing to numb for the pain. And he says, it's okay. And he says, I ran into a fence.
Obviously a lie.
Obviously a lie. My heart was breaking for him because at this point, I am 100%. He did not do this. He did not commit this crime. And it kind of broke my heart for him a little bit that he's spent 10 years, because she's pointing out in her mind all the different scars that he has. And
like he's resigned in his mind to the mm-hmm. fact that this is my life now mm-hmm. and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, but to me, I would think, wouldn't you be so livid being face to face with the person? You have endured nightmares that only people who have experienced prison at the maximum security level that he is at would even understand, and you're innocent.
Right.
I couldn't even fathom being as calm as he was. It's just different, I guess.
No, and I mean, you do have that a decade has passed, so there's been some hardening of his emotions, I'm sure, in there. But I'm inclined to agree with you on that. I do want to take just a real brief moment and do a side note on the treatment of the patients in prison. And I don't want to get too much on a soapbox here. I appreciated the fact that Brooke was
advocating.
Yes, that Brooke was an advocate for these prisoners and really stood up to her supervisor, who would not allow her to get the bed for the paraplegic or get the lidocaine and keep it in stock. So kudos to her mm-hmm. for sticking her guns and really making sure that the prisoners had the health care that they deserved as humans.
I was thinking that too. I think a lot of times we don't stop and think about that, but there were so many scenes when she was having to treat and just that that pressure ulcer that one patient had. I just couldn't fathom because, like she said, they're still human beings and they still deserve healthcare.
Absolutely.
And so.
Yeah, I tried to do a bit of a deep dive on that, but I didn't want to get suctioned into that. So yeah. I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I did think about it a lot when I was reading this. Moving on to Officer Hunt. There's a lot of connection here with Officer Hunt. We don't realize this at the start of the story, but there's definitely some backstory here. He's showing some major hostility to Shane, and Brooke just cannot understand what is happening between them.
It was very interesting to me that, one, didn't she kind of initially think he looked familiar?
Yes.
Okay. See, when we read these stories that they're thinking somebody looks familiar, but they can't place them, I can't understand how they can't recognize certain people, even if they change a little bit. I'm like, that drastically that you can't pinpoint?
Well, in 10 years. And even if you did, you're like, do we know each other?
Yeah.
Like, address it if you really are unsure.
Yeah. So that was interesting. But yeah, I found Hunt's treatment and his reaction to everything about Shane, the hostility, the fact that he was always shackled. At one point, Dorothy comes in and says, Marcus, why is Shane shackled together? You know, and he's a firm believer that he is very violent. Mm-hmm. And they make him take the shackles off, which at that point, I'm totally on Shane's side.
So, okay, then I want to ask you this. Once you found out that he was a victim of Shane's, did that change your perspective on how he had treated him early in the story?
Okay, so if we're going to talk about that, we need to just... So we've mentioned that this goes from present to past.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why Hunt is hostile towards Shane is we find out in the past that Shane beat up a kid and put him in the hospital. And that kid ends up being Marcus Hunt, who is his correctional officer in the prison with him.
Which begs the question also, how come Officer Hunt didn't make that connection to the powers that be? Does he have to?
I was wondering that as well. I thought that that was very strange. There's so much about this that makes me want to look into what is okay and acceptable and what is not. But then you have to stop and think, you know, you take a lawyer who messes up and then goes to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear stories about them being in prison with people they've put in prison. Or
an police officer.
Yeah, people they've put in prison and then they're rubbing shoulders with them. So I don't think it's unrealistic. I think it could totally happen, especially if you are an officer in the community or a community nearby.
But you don't feel like they have to disclose that to their superiors? Dorothy didn't know that there was a connection because she clearly says there's no reason for him to be in chains. If she'd known that he had been hospitalized by Shane, wouldn't she have had a different opinion maybe?
Yeah, but why would they have known that? Because Marcus or Officer Hunt was a minor when that happened. So why would they even need to acknowledge that? But if Shane truly is in prison, you would think that there would be some kind of a record, but I guess that wasn't ever... I mean, he never had charges filed against him or anything.
No, I don't think
so. So he puts him in the hospital. So when we find out that he's the kid, first of all, I thought, well, he's definitely beefed up or something. Because
were you surprised?
I was so surprised.
I was too.
I kept thinking that Hunt knew Tim somehow, but I never thought that Hunt knew everybody else.
Yeah.
So when we find out that Shane and him went to high school together and that Shane beat him up and put him in the hospital, I was surprised. Did I feel like that warranted his hostility? No, I didn't. But that's because I don't believe in being vengeful and spiteful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of hard because you sit there and you say, well, Shane murdered, you know, three people. And that's why he's in prison.
Yeah.
For the murders of three classmates of his and Hunt's. And so you kind of think, well, yeah, maybe that warrants his hostility. But I don't know. It just seems kind of petty because the man is already in prison. He's serving time for a crime that he's, you know, committed or supposedly committed. Do I think that that gives you the right? No, I don't think so. I think it's completely unprofessional. I don't care if they are in prison. In my personal opinion, they are in prison to serve their time for the crime they committed. But it is not up to the police officers in there to treat them less than. They have a job to do. They need to keep them in line. They need to keep the other prisoners safe. But to kind of bully because you're in a higher position.
Yeah.
I don't agree with. That's just me. A lot of people are going to disagree, and I can't even understand, you know, how. I mean, if I had a family member that was a victim, I don't know how I would feel about the inmate. But in this case, I felt like Hunt was completely wrong. But I also very strongly throughout the entire story
thought that Shane was innocent.
Yeah.
So let's shift over then to Tim.
Okay.
Let's talk about Tim. In the present timeline, we have Tim, who's now the assistant principal at her son's school, mm-hmm. Josh's school. And kind of along the same lines, we get the backstory of how they've been best friends since they were in diapers. They've known each other. They've had this very close bond. But in the present, he's giving some major creepy stalker vibes.
Yes, he is. Holy moly.
And that, I feel like, is the author's way of misdirecting us.
Yeah.
A bit.
Mm-hmm. I found him to be incredibly just heebie-jeebie.
Yes.
Super nice guy. You want to believe that he's just genuine, but man oh man, does he lay it on thick, his attraction to her.
He does.
And in the past and in the present, I found him to be very off. There was just something off. And I also kind of felt like Tim, there was a couple of conversations that happen that he doesn't tell her the full truth. And it seems like he wants to keep a little bit of information to himself, like when he went out with the waitress.
That was a red flag to me.
Yeah, he had a lot of red flags. What did you think?
He didn't disclose all of the things. He had a lot of plot holes, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the author really did a good job of us, like, directing us to feel like he was going to be the murderer for a very long time. I was very convinced that he was going to be the one. He seems, early on, I made notes that he seemed very questionable to me. He mm-hmm. was the boy next door. So you wanted to really like him. They had this friendship growing up. He obviously had a crush on Brooke and was jealous of Shane early on when they were younger. And at one point I did question, is this going to be a romance between Tim and Brooke? I wrote that early on in my notes. And it was when he asked her to go to coffee mm-hmm. and the waitress was there. And that whole scene, I just felt uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if it was going to be a romance between the two of them, it was going to feel forced and not something that I was going to really support. So I was really questioning at that point in the story how the author was going to make me fall in love with him, because he felt very creepy to me.
He felt very creepy to me, and right from the get-go, like in the past, mm-hmm. when she gets out of Shane's truck and he says, so what's at 7:30? And is trying to tell her Shane is dangerous, you need to stay away. He kind of stares at her. But I have to say something. I was not a fan of Brooke throughout the story.
Okay, tell me more.
Were you not annoyed with how back and forth she was when she would have these kind of discerning moments where she felt like something was off? She tried to put it behind her like, no, that's not. No, I'm just being paranoid. No, that's not weird. Also, I was very frustrated with her. I'm going to jump into the past for just a second. In the past scenario, we know that the whole 7:30 thing is she's staying the night with Shane for the first time. Her and a couple of their friends are going to stay the night, just the four of them. She's going to have this alone time. She ends up inviting Tim to convince Tim that Shane is not this bad guy that he says he is. Another girl comes, and the interaction with Kayla, the other girl, and Tim, Brooke is jealous.
She and absolutely is jealous of Kayla.
So then when we go back to the present, she's jealous. She's jealous of Kelly, the waitress. And it was very, I was getting whiplash with a lot of her emotions, how she felt in the past. She's so in love with Shane, but yet she's jealous of Tim. But yet she notices that he looks at her a little bit differently. And she doesn't like that.
Well, it was like she liked the attention of both boys. It was kind of one of those examples of, I don't want you, but I don't want you to have anyone else.
Yes.
But part of the conflict in the present, well, both timelines actually, is that Shane is telling her to be leery of Tim. Tim is telling her to be leery of Shane. And mm-hmm. so she's got this push and pull against both of the guys in her life, people that she's very close to. And so there's some inner conflict that she's already having to deal with. So I think that when she feels those discerning moments, she's relying on either or whoever is not in the situation kind of having their whispers in her mind. Like,
that's a really good point. I did not think of it from that perspective, and I probably should have that you just saying that both of the guys are telling her that, it's like I knew that, but I didn't think about that being why she's so
wishy-washy.
Yes, it just drove me crazy throughout the whole thing, and especially all the times that she in the present is, I know he is the one that tried to kill me. I know Shane is the one that tried to kill me. And when she has to interact with him in the prison, she is adamant, I know he tried to kill me. But then she also has sympathy for him. Mm-hmm. She hates the way that Hunt is being hostile towards him. She hates the fact that he's not being treated fairly. She even kind of in her mind has that split second where she has to stitch him up without the lidocaine. And she thinks, I should enjoy this. And then she thinks, no, I shouldn't.
Right.
You know, I don't know. There was just something about her. I had to pause and tell myself, this person at a very young age went through something so traumatic. Not only did she go through that, 2 months later she finds out she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She has to sit through her pregnancy quietly. The only people who know are her parents. She has to go through this whole trial. And then she has to move away. Her parents do not want her in town. They don't want anybody knowing she's having a baby. They want her to abort the baby. She doesn't. So I tried to remind myself that this is a person who, I don't know how much therapy she went through to mm-hmm. kind of cope
mm-hmm.
with what she had endured. So maybe that would be the reason why she responded the way she did. Maybe that's the reason why she responded to in a way that I did not feel you should, because I haven't experienced anything the way she had.
It seemed to me as a reader that the author was taking her back and forth through this turmoil, this indecisiveness, to also keep us as the reader on the edge of our seat questioning, is it Tim? Is it Shane? Is it Tim? Is it Shane? Is it Tim? Is it Shane? Okay. And we just never really know, because we're feeling her emotions and her back and forth indecisiveness too.
That's a very good point, Amy. You're so wise.
Thriller. So let's shift over to the past with the farmhouse.
Okay.
The grisly murder scene when it all starts going down. It felt a lot like an episode of Clue or a game of Clue. Like whodunit, a murder mystery party is what it felt like to me as I was trying to figure out with them who the murderer was. We have the setup where they get all the friends to the mm-hmm. farmhouse once everybody's there. The first murder happens with Brandon out on the porch. Now, I gotta admit, for a teeny tiny little brief moment, I thought maybe Brandon is the killer. Before he's murdered, obviously.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. It didn't last very long. It was real, you know, like, and then he died right off the bat. I'm like, well, okay.
He is the typical teen. Okay, see, you say like a game of Clue. The entire time I was reading this, when they are in the past at the farmhouse, I'm thinking of the movie Scream.
Oh, yeah.
I am thinking of the movie Scream literally the entire time. I told my husband about the story and he goes, this reminds me of like Scream. And
I said, yes. Then you should have picked up on the fact that there were two people if you were thinking Scream.
Okay.
Did you?
I have to admit, before she, at the end, we know that at one point she thinks Tim and Shane both were killers.
Mm-hmm.
There was, before she ever got there, I had a split second where I thought to myself, they are both killers and Tim is free and Shane is not. That probably doesn't sit well with Shane. And then I thought, that's crazy.
That's crazy. So you had Scream vibes.
I did.
So Brandon gets murdered and Chelsea is the one to find him. We find out that it's stab wounds. That's mm-hmm. how he's killed. And there's just a lot of angst happening
from
this moment forward. Mm-hmm. You're in the woods. You've got this storm. There's no power.
Kayla is freaking out.
Kayla is freaking the heck out. And I am right there with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those like where you're like clapping your hands really fast because you're like, oh my gosh, I am having so much adrenaline right now. What is happening? She does not want to be there. She's mm-hmm. like, peace out. See ya. But then they notice that the tires are slashed on all the vehicles.
They're slashed. It's flooding. She can't get out because the storm is so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that girl runs upstairs and locks herself in a room. She's like, y'all are crazy. I'm staying upstairs. And I thought, more power to you, sister, because I'd be right there with you.
There was a point when I was thinking that it wasn't Shane or Tim, right as Brandon is murdered and Chelsea's screaming, and they both come out of the bedroom. And here we have Brooke and Shane, who have been together all night long, and we have Kayla and Tim, who've been together mm-hmm. all, so they can vouch for each other.
Right.
So who killed Brandon? In my mind, there's someone else lurking around.
That's what I thought. And they make mention of that at one point. They mm-hmm. say that there must be somebody out and about that is, you know, that did this. And that's a possibility. But they quickly, like...
Dispel that
because Tim pulls Brooke into the kitchen and he went to get a knife and all the kitchen knives are gone.
Yes, that was real, like, spooky. That was very spooky.
But then he immediately is attacking that this is... He's saying it's Shane. This is Shane. And she just doesn't... Brooke doesn't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I kind of understand that. Like, she just slept with the guy. Yeah. You know? She doesn't believe that it's him.
So then that moves them, Chelsea and Brooke, into the bedroom. They don't want to stay in there. They end up...
Well, no. They don't move into the bedroom immediately. They all go upstairs, remember? They go upstairs and yes. they find Kayla.
Yes. Oh, yes. Kayla's been murdered.
And Chelsea is saying it's either Shane or Tim because Tim was alone when Chelsea and Brooke were talking. Shane was outside trying to find cell service. And Chelsea says, to heck with you all. Brooke and I are going into Shane's bedroom. We're waiting this out. You guys stay together.
Were you kind of going through the same thought process that Brooke was and thinking that Chelsea could have done it?
No.
Okay.
No, I was not. And she kind of makes mention that, you know, she doesn't, at one point, she is thinking in her mind, she doesn't really like Chelsea. A lot of things about her, like, she's her best friend, but she doesn't trust her kind of thing. I felt like Chelsea's reaction was so...
Genuine.
And she was thinking, we need to find a weapon. We need to get through this. So, no, I did not. I was very frightened. This is one of the points where I'm very annoyed with Brooke. Because Chelsea, she asks her, who do you think it is? And she goes, I think it's Tim. And Chelsea makes a very valid case of why it could be Tim. Brooke doesn't want to believe it. And then she immediately starts turning on Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't want to believe that her childhood best friend did this. She doesn't want to believe her boyfriend did it. So she just needs to find, you know, somebody who did. And as a result, she gets Chelsea killed.
Yeah, she does.
It's really heartbreaking.
Do you feel like the killer was in the room with them?
Oh, why did you say that? I literally just got freaked out.
Your face right now. Well, because we know that Chelsea...
Who's behind me?
Sarah just looked behind her like someone was going to come up and okay. stab her sitting
there. Listeners, you need to understand, Sarah doesn't do suspense. I hate suspense. It terrifies me, but I love it. Oh my goodness. Oh.
I say that because Chelsea gets murdered shortly after Brooke goes and she shuts the door.
Immediately. Amy, she immediately gets murdered.
I definitely
murdered.
Think the murderer was in the room with them. But she was searching for a weapon. So how did she find it?
The murderer had to have been in the room with them because Brooke could barely get the door open because they had all of the books stacked against it. And so, she was able to wedge mm-hmm. it just enough.
To get your right.
To squeeze through. Amy, what did you tell me that? Now I'm terrified. I literally have goosebumps. Let's move on. This story's freaking me out.
Okay, so she goes downstairs. She trips over what she thinks is a body. It definitely is a body. We learn later it's Tim. He's been stabbed by Shane, and Shane is trying to strangle her with the necklace. Now, the whole time she's thinking there's a noise that she can't place. That mm-hmm. I knew that was going to come into play and that would eventually reveal some major clues. Shane tries to strangle her and she ends up running out of the farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So let's shift back to the present timeline.
Okay.
Brooke and Tim are dating. We have this new babysitter, Margie, which turns out to be a very grandmotherly figure mm-hmm. in Josh's life. Josh really connects to her. They have a really great connection. She teaches him to bake. They do all these fun craft things together. And there's this really tight bond. He also has a strong bond with Tim, which I loved so much. I enjoyed their interaction, him helping him with his schoolwork.
Okay, Tim shifted for me. He was creepy and giving me the creepy vibes. But when he realizes that Josh is Shane's son, he wants to leave the house. He didn't know. He thought her son was in kindergarten. She says, I never said that. And he realizes he assumed. So he starts to back away. And it isn't until Josh runs around the corner, like, we need to fix the sink. And Tim comes in. And I loved Tim's response after that because he said, he's a really great kid.
Yeah.
And that for me was when I thought Tim is not as bad as maybe what we're thinking. But then this is really where, because the whole time in this whole story, Amy, at that point, I am convinced Tim is the one that did it. Shane is completely innocent.
Same.
When he starts bonding with Josh and he starts being so good to him, that's where I really felt that
push-pull struggle of maybe feeling what Brooke was feeling, mm-hmm. not really being sure. And then as they start dating, when he, on her birthday, gives her that snowflake necklace and she freaks smooth out because that's the necklace Shane tried to strangle her with.
And how would he, as her best friend, not remember that?
I know. That was so horrible. When he said, I forgot. But then when she looks at it, when she gets home from dinner and sees it is the exact one. Necklace.
Yeah.
I, at that point, because I had shifted, okay, Tim didn't do it. I shifted back. Oh, mm-hmm. Tim did it. And he is messing with her.
Yeah,
this is terrifying.
Same.
And then I also was kind of shifting back to Tim being the one when Kelly, the waitress, runs into Brooke mm-hmm. and is kind of hostile towards her and says, you're just one of many girls that he's brought into the bar.
Yes.
I found that very interesting. And then later on, Tim and her have this discussion of he denies really kind of having, when she goes missing, that's when it is. When Kelly goes missing and she says, isn't that the waitress? He's like, I don't know.
I thought, yeah, it was very strange.
Why wouldn't you just say something?
And then she
something?
Goes and stalks her on Facebook and finds all these like confirming clues.
Yes. But then her thought process is, well, he probably is just not wanting to acknowledge it because two women now that he has dated. Because if we go back to the past, mm-hmm. when they're at the farmhouse, they play the game, Never Have I Ever. And 4 months prior, there is a girl that was one of their classmates that was found murdered in the woods. Mm-hmm. And Shane says, never have I ever gone on a date with Tracy. And Tim has to take a drink. So now it's two women that he has gone right. out with that are missing. And one of them was dead. It does not. So at that point, I was back on, Tim did it. He did it.
Yeah. So. And about that time, Shane finds out about her son.
Yes.
Because she slips and says something about his age, his class, fourth grade, when he was in fourth grade.
Yeah. Brooke is not very good about keeping her personal life private with the inmates.
Oh, no.
I can't even understand why she would disobey that.
Those rules are in place for a reason.
Absolutely.
For her safety.
For her safety, for the safety of her children. It really irks me that she did that. But I also kind of was happy she did because Shane was innocent.
Yeah.
He was innocent to me and he deserved to know. So, okay, let's jump back to the babysitter.
Yeah.
She is watching Josh. I never had any weird vibes coming from her. Did you?
No, not one. I loved her as the babysitter. I loved the relationship that she had with Josh and the connection that they had, the closeness. I love that they bonded over making cookies and just fun, different things. To be honest, she felt like a grandmother to him.
Yeah, she was pretty special. So let's pick this up. So we know that Kelly has gone missing. Brooke has had some vibes with Tim. She's questioning. She goes to his house. Margie is watching Josh. Mm-hmm. Margie encourages this relationship with Tim.
Which
this
was
whole
a,
thing.
That was a misdirection from the author for us.
Absolutely.
In a major way.
Absolutely. It so was. So she goes to dinner and they kind of have conversation, whatever. She goes down to the wine cellar basement. I thought that was so... There's the humor in that. Because she was said, it's so cute that he calls it a wine cellar. It's really a basement. And she notices a funny smell. And in the corner of his basement, Amy, she finds a dead body.
A dead body.
It is Kelly.
Ugh.
When she could not get out of the basement, when the door was
locked. I was convinced Tim was going to kill her.
I didn't think he was going to kill her, but I thought he was going to keep her down there.
Uh-huh.
And I told myself, oh, this is getting good. Shane really is innocent. She is trapped in this basement. This is not good. And when he opens the door and then the police are already there, I found that very bizarre. They got an anonymous tip that he had gone on some dates with this Kelly and the shock on his face.
That was a red flag. That was when I'm very back and forth in this scene.
Yes.
When he's locking her in there, I'm feeling, okay, he's definitely it. And then when he's like, oh, it was just jammed, here, come out. And then the shock on his face, like you said, I'm like, oh, he's definitely innocent.
Yeah. I thought he was just a really good actor and then he's panicking. I don't know. So we got to fast forward. It's a couple months later.
He goes to prison.
Because they find a dead body in his basement. Doesn't look good for Timmy boy.
No, it doesn't.
Shane gets out.
Shane is exonerated.
Because she tells them she never saw the person choking her, their face. And now she believes that Tim has done all of this. That Tim killed Tracy, that he went on a date with them when they were teens. Kelly, and all these other people. Amy, I have to say something that very much I was so just baffled by. Shane gets out of prison. She feels like he has no one because his mom, he has told her, his mom died 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He had a single mom. She picks him up and takes him to her house
mm-hmm.
with their son. I cannot stress to you how panicked I felt for her, for Josh, regardless of the fact that she thought he was innocent, because you cannot make me believe that somebody who just lost 10 years of their life is not holding any kind of ill feeling towards you, bitterness, anything.
And here's just my life as an open book. You're welcome to come in and make yourself at home in our lives.
With a 10-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the fact that Shane is the dad.
Yeah.
Listen.
There should have been some supervised visits in public places.
Okay, yeah. So Shane comes. They don't tell Josh that he's his dad, which I was proud of her for that.
Yeah, same.
And there are so many things that are happening when he gets there. The fact that she sleeps with him.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And she kind of thought to herself, well, you know, he hasn't done it since the night he got arrested. She thinks the only time he's ever been with anybody was her, and the night he got arrested. I'm like, well, that probably was a big fat lie. She wakes up. The second thing that I thought when I was shifting back to, I don't know that Shane is innocent. She was having nightmares the first night he was in her house.
So I know that there's the car missing scene that comes to play
that wakes
also.
Her up. Yeah.
But what did it for me, what sealed it for me, for Shane, was when Brooke asked Josh how he felt mm-hmm. about Shane, and he said he was uncomfortable.
Yes.
When he did not sing Shane's praises, I thought, oh,
get
no.
the man out of your house.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. I just kind of thought, what kind of mother lets a man who's been in prison for 10 years in the same house with their son. Honestly, Amy, what does she even know about the guy? She dated him for like 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm. 10 years
she
ago.
She didn't even know him that well.
Mm-mm.
Can you even imagine bringing him into a home with your child?
And then he's adamant on taking her back to the site of her almost strangulation.
Yes. Yes.
And does not bat an eye. Like, oh, you should be
at
over
this
it. It's
point,
been 10 years.
At
Why
this point.
Oh my gosh.
Sarah. I thought, oh no, Timmy is innocent. Uh-huh. Let Timmy go. Because when he said, it was my house, I grew up in it for 18 years, I thought, no, 3 people were murdered in that house. You were arrested, falsely accused. You lost 10 years of your life. And you want to go back there? No, something's up.
Major red flag.
When he was happy, when she looks at him and she makes a mental note of he almost looks happy
mm-hmm,
when they
mm-hmm,
pulled in,
mm-hmm,
I thought to myself, oh, you are going to die. Mm-hmm. You're going to die and he's going to take your son.
So they're there in the snowstorm.
Yes.
And when she starts putting things together, this is the moment where she's thinking, oh, it was 2 of them. Tim and Shane.
Mm-hmm.
This is where she has this realization and she's freaking out because now Shane has taken Josh off to make snowmen out in the field somewhere else where the cell phone's not very good. And she's trying to act normal. And when she calls him, he definitely can tell in her voice that she has figured things out.
Well, she got online. She's searching online for the news. And who died and found that body that morning? Marcus Hunt.
Yes.
The hostile officer towards Shane.
Yes.
So that's when she calls him.
Yes. And so she is freaking out trying to get to the road. And lo and behold, who pulls up to rescue her?
Margie! The babysitter.
And she's thinking, this is strange. Why is she here? And then it all starts to unravel.
It starts to unravel. Friend,
very fast paced.
When I tell you the shock I felt that she recognizes when she says, he's okay, he's with his father. And Brooke starts to say something and she says, wait, what? Because she never told Margie that Shane was staying with him, that Shane was Josh's father, never told him any of these things.
I know.
Mind blown, Amy.
No.
Mind blown. Mind you, this is like 10% left in the book.
Yes.
She finds out that Margie is really Pamela Nelson, Shane's mom. Why is Pamela Nelson so upset?
Yes, why?
With Brooke? Because, Brooke's parents kept her away from that community. Because Brooke's dad, when Shane was 5 years old, had a year-long affair with Pamela.
Yes!
And promised to leave his wife and daughter for her. And he did not. He backed out.
I know.
She had this vengeance that she just wanted to unleash on this family. She wanted revenge.
So do you feel like she turned her son into a murderer? Or do you think he was a murderer?
No, Amy, no. I don't. And here's why. I feel like when Brooke's
dad... Because we do find out here that Margie and Shane were... They did the three grisly murders together. They were working
They did the grisly murders. But more than that, Pamela, when Brooke's dad left her when she was young and Shane was young, they both would have been five. Pamela probably was very mentally unwell and carried that anger and that rage and that bitterness and always pointed out to Shane, you don't have a dad. We could have had a dad. We could have had a husband. We could have had this life. It could have been so different. I mean, their farmhouse is falling apart. It's standing on its, you know, it's just, it's bad. And it gets to the point where we come to find out that he came home freaking out with blood on his hands. Shane's the one that killed Tracy.
You're right.
Yeah. You didn't remember that?
No, I had forgotten that.
Shane is the one who killed Tracy months before.
Yes.
4 months before, didn't know what to do.
Yes.
And she said, we got away with it once.
You're right. I don't know how. I was just racing through the end. Everything was happening. So...
Everything. Yeah. It's everything was happening. So Shane had already killed.
You're right.
And
wow.
Then they make this big plan to get everybody there. And they used Tim. She's, you know, he was their patsy. Because he had gone on a date with Tracy. So
that's true. Yeah. So, okay. So here at this point, after there's the tussle with Margie or Pamela and she has been shot, we hear Josh screaming and we come to find out that Shane has been, all these icicles in this big like snow bluff has fallen on him. And the scene kind of ends with Brooke thinking to herself, Josh doesn't realize he's already dead. It's so kind of sad. Like, he doesn't hear his dad's died right in front of him and he doesn't realize it.
He doesn't even know he's his dad.
Doesn't even know he's his dad. They had just gone out to make snowmen. And it kind of just wraps that scene up in a nice little tidy bow. It shifts us to Tim. He's out of prison now. You're kind of hoping for this reconciliation, their romance to pick back up where it left off. Obviously, there was some tension there. I loved how he tells her when she says, you must hate me. And he says no. And you think that he's saying no to the fact that he's not going to come to talk to Josh. And then he says, no, I don't hate you.
He says, I'm really, really mad at you.
Which was warranted for sure.
100%. My goodness, that poor man. I would have walked away from her.
I'm glad that they kind of took things slowly and they kind of built that relationship and that foundation again, because there obviously had been some hurt and some damage there. There was some restoration that needed to take place. So I'm glad that was a slow build. And you think it's just wrapped up in
very
this
nicely.
Nice,
yeah.
Tidy bow. You're thinking, oh, she pulled some things over on me. And then, Sarah, it goes to the epilogue from Josh's perspective. And even the first three pages of that epilogue, you're like, oh, they had...
It's so sweet.
It's so sweet. And
Josh loves Tim.
Josh loves Tim so much, and Tim has just really taken him under his wing. And then what does Tim tell him? He says, Shane is a bad dude. If anyone named Shane Nelson ever comes around, boy, he is going to hurt your mama. And in the final few sentences of the epilogue, Sarah, my mind was blown.
I was freaking out. I was freaking out.
Turns out, Josh murdered his dad.
Murdered his dad.
At 10 years
old. Straight up murdered his dad. Took a big icicle and pummeled him over the head. And he lost count. He said he lost count.
That takes
some
major anger.
I love my mom. I would do anything for my mom. What? Are you kidding me? Amy, I was losing my mind. I jumped up from the couch and I said, oh my God. Oh my God. I could not believe that was how it turned out.
I know. I was done and I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
I was blown away with Pamela being Margie, having killed, she owned up, she killed Chelsea.
Yes.
And that was the sound that Brooke heard when she was being strangled, was Chelsea being killed at the same time. So the fact that you pointed out, now I know that Pamela was really in Shane's closet Thank you for the nightmares.
You're welcome.
Oh my goodness. I was in such shock. I did not think. The whole story was so predictable to me. So predictable.
Same.
Tim did it. Shane's innocent. They're going to have their happy ever after. It's going to be beautiful. When Pamela owns up to what they did, Shane dies. Pamela confesses everything because at that point her son's gone. That's how Tim gets out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that Josh is a little killer like his daddy.
At 10 years old. Oof.
Because he will do anything for his mama.
Oh.
Girl.
Oh my gosh.
That was what this story.
Readers, we need to know, were you caught by surprise by this final mind-blown moment of Josh's perspective and his actions with his dad? We need to know, were you caught off guard?
We do.
And what other fun surprises did you get caught off guard, or did you not see coming twists and turns in the story? Did you find alarming or the misdirection? We want to know all your thoughts on that.
It was a great story.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did and that you want to continue the discussion with us. We would love to hear from you. We want to know what were your favorite parts of the story. Hit us up on Instagram at Post Book Depression Podcast or on Facebook in our Post Book Depression discussion group. You can also email us at postbookdepressionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep reading.